Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening this week. I'm Jared Serbu. On this edition of our show, time for another update on progress toward what the Pentagon calls the Joint Information Environment, a long effort to bring the military services' IT systems into a more cohesive structure using shared enterprise services, a single security architecture, and hopefully reducing its overall costs. It's been almost 2 years since we devoted a full hour on this program to GIE, and a lot has happened since then, including the beginnings of the stand-up of the first tangible element of the project, Joint Regional Security Stacks, and several leadership changes at the Pentagon, including a new CIO, a new deputy secretary, and a new defense secretary. Joining us for the full hour to walk us through where we stand with JIE are two of the officials overseeing the effort from the DOD CIO's office, Danielle Metz, the JIE project director, and David Cotton, who took over as the new deputy CIO for Information Enterprise back in March. We'll begin with Mr. Cotton. I asked him to start us off with a quick refresher on exactly what JIE is.
Well, JIE is the concept to bring together the Department of Defense and its information technology space to provide a more coherent environment to be able to better share information and secure that information as well. In the DOD CIO, we focus on some major areas, though, that are in the Joint Information Environment. We'll talk more about that later today. The Joint Regional Security Stacks, which is the security piece for the overall network. We are focused on cloud computing and how that we can capitalize upon that commercial as well as our own data center consolidation efforts. We share information with our coalition partners whenever we have an operation, and that we call our mission partner environment. So that's a major line of operation. We also have some IT consolidation activities taking place and mobility, such as, you know, today's cell phones, smartphones. But as that disconnected worker, how you can capitalize upon that for that mobility piece, whether it be in daily business life or in the tactical battlefield environment as well. And then you'll hear a lot of focus right now on cyber basics. Just to get our cyber foundation appropriately positioned in the department to better defend and understand the status of our networks and availability.
In terms of that cyber basics, Mr. Halverson's talked a lot about that lately. Why is that folded in to JIE itself? Describe how that fits into this overall enterprise view of how the department is approaching IT going forward.
Well, the first part and main foundational piece of JIE is the Joint Regional Security Stack, which is that security piece of the network. And even before we do that security piece of the network, there's actually the expansion of our bandwidth, we call the optical core of the DoD information network, and we add some more switching called the MPLS, which allows us to actually reduce the number of circuits and better manage that, which gives us a coherent ability to understand and manage traffic based on its function and capability, the right priority. So the cyber basics then is to have all that work and function appropriately. We need employees to be very aware of their cyber environment. As we know in our daily lives, you get phishing emails at home, your passwords, you know, we say don't use 1234. You know, if you're going to go to your bank account from your home computer, have something make sense. Same thing at work. Exercise those same cyber basics you would for yourself, for the business, to protect the nation's information and be able to do your job. So we just make that point over and over, as well as keeping the patches, the software. We have a regimen already in the department to update networks and servers and workstations. It's just to emphasize that because the enterprise is so large and so many different players involved in that, is that we need to make sure that all those forces are working together in a uniform fashion. With JRSS, the Joint Regional Security Stack, we actually simplify some of that because instead of having all these different activities and points of presence on the network where information flows between the defense environment to the internet, will reduce the number of those points of presence and actually reduce the number of people managing those security devices in the network to provide a more coherent and solid defensible environment.
I want to talk a lot more about JRSS and some of the other on-the-ground activities as we go, but stepping back for a second and just talking a little bit more about some of the foundational concepts behind JIE, you know, the department's been out in public talking about why we're doing JIE for, I want to say 4 years, correct me if I've got the timeline wrong, but I mean, obviously a lot changes over that, over the course of that period, whether that's technology, you've had a lot of leadership changes, a new CIO, a new deputy secretary, obviously you're relatively new in the job. During that period, have there been anything that you would point to as changes in direction, changes in course in terms of where we're going with JIE, or even changes in emphasis in response to changes in technology, or how the whole thing has worked out thus far?
Yeah, I would say the main emphasis is that we realize that technology allows us to do more centrally, and therefore want to take advantage of that. And why have many enclaves providing the similar working capability to be more cost efficient and effective, operationally effective at the same time, to consolidate some of that? So part of JIE is to provide that environment which has those enclaves collapse down. As I mentioned, you may have heard even in the Pentagon space, we're approaching it as Joint Base Pentagon, right, to take some of the IT service organizations and bring them together and provide the same level of service or better with fewer number of IT service organizations doing that. Does each military service need to, for example, provide its own security in its network? Maybe not, which is why we're doing JRSS, you know, provide that more centralized capability. And so JIE allows us to have more enterprise approach, which actually improves our capability because it puts us on the same baseline. So we have less to worry about to have interfaces between different environments and networks because we're on the same common platform, the same approach. We have the same standards. And also it reduces your training. When someone moves from one location to another, they're familiar with the location where they came from, and they're familiar with the technology when they go to that deployed or another base where they move, because it's the same environment. It's not a different, even something as simple as an email client. It's not a different way, a different address. You know, as I move around, my email address now stays the same. It doesn't change if I should move jobs or location somewhere. So it simplifies, which allows us on the efficiencies and effectiveness. It gets us back to focus more on our core business of the Department of Defense, less about the IT, more about the mission. And it puts the capability in the hands of professionals to be able to manage that.
If the end state is getting everybody to a single set of standards, I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that each of the military services, the COCOMs, the agencies are coming from different starting places, mm-hmm. right? So talk a bit, if you can, about how you're managing that, how you're accommodating service-specific needs, and again, different starting places.
And so there's some give and take in all this, and that's part of what Daniel Metz and I spend a lot of time on, is working with those services and agencies to understand what their unique requirements are and how we can then mediate and accommodate. My personal experience, having, you know, almost 30 years active duty in the military, you find some enclave of folks that say they have some special need requirement, and you'll find out there are some special needs, but usually you find out there's more common need than different. And so it's to understand and appreciate how we can meet those common needs. And in many cases, some of your partners actually bring ideas you hadn't thought of, which actually can improve what that common solution was going to be. So it's truly collaborative from that standpoint. It was interesting, as part of, I mentioned before, one of our lines of operation on our focus is that mission partner environment. It was, in fact, it put a huge smile on my face when we had five of the deputy commanders of five of those combatant commands, COCOMs, wrote a letter to the CIO, my boss, Terry Halverson, asking for his help to actually align them and bring them together to have one common solution and standard, where in the past you'd expect those combatant commands to do what they needed to do for their region. But in this case, they all realized that the way information technology is today, and they have common information needs, and working with their coalition partners is very similar. So why don't we develop a common solution and approach so we can all serve this together in one coherent fashion, instead of having five different individual projects which may not work well together? So we're seeing a change actually in the culture of people and the understanding. Part of that obviously is the pressure of budget, but that's just a responsible action of responsible people to the situation to spend the taxpayers' dollars in the most efficient and effective way.
You mentioned Joint Base Pentagon, and do you see that as sort of, in some ways, a test bed for how you can consolidate IT, maybe at individual joint bases or within COCOMs? Are you trying to prove out some of the JIE concepts, within the physical confines of the Pentagon itself right now?
I wouldn't say we're testing it. I'd say it's been done in some places already. We have other joint bases where, mm-hmm. at some level, there's been some standardization. Where, for example, at Joint Base San Antonio, where the first operational JRSS is, that is a joint base. But at the Pentagon, we're taking it in the confines of that building, maybe a step further by collapsing down the actual IT service providing organizations, instead of aligning the standards, actually in this case aligning it to the service delivery organization will be, you know, a singular one instead of multiple. And we'll see where it goes after that. If we think that there's actually value or benefit from looking at other places, and we'll do that. But again, that's happening naturally in some places.
Very early stages so far. How far down the road are you on that?
Very early stages. So this is still in the discovery and marching down some of the technology and policy things to find out, again, are there any unique requirements, as you mentioned before, that need to be addressed, and we don't miss those unique requirements because of the different customers that were supported, and then how to capitalize on what is available. It is to our benefit that one of the agencies was already primarily the infrastructure provider in the building. So that is one piece of the puzzle that is known. And now it's understanding the services delivery part.
Let's go back to the mission partner environment that you mentioned a second ago, because that seems like potentially one of the most challenging pieces of all this, because not only do you have DOD and a whole bunch of different COCOMs, you have, as it's been described to me before, an organization like Transcom that has to interface with many, many commercial networks. You have, you know, National Guard garrisons in 50 different states and a whole bunch of different territories. Bring us up to speed on how that mission partner environment is coming together. Are elements of it in place now and allowing you to collapse some of those capabilities and create this unified, coherent architecture?
Yes. In the past, and even today, whenever we have a coalition operation, when we started doing this in 2001, I would say it was the first time we did this, we would put together a network that our coalition partners would meet us on, and we would usually provide them the equipment and the terminals to actually collaborate with us. That is not the solution we want for the future. We want to have the coalition partner with the information technology equipment they have. They can then connect to the network. It might be as simple as through a secure internet connection using appropriate encryption device to be able to connect to us, to be able to then enter in and collaborate, so for whatever that is. So it goes from you might want to say, the warfighting capability to the other end of the spectrum, which we have in place as well, such as something called APAN, APAN, which is used, for example, as most recently Nepal, when the earthquake took place there. We actually have communities that use this service. It's an open service where you can develop chat rooms and post information as information sharing. So anyone that needs information, in this case about the earthquake, we had a DOD, someone on my staff, a DOD member, who kind of monitors and observes what takes place, because the tool's out there and people naturally use that tool, and they post information, daily sit reps, what's needed, what's moving, what do they see. And then it's these rooms and discussion areas kind of great. It's a web environment. So, and it's an open, unclassified, whoever needs to. So that's kind of the other end of the spectrum. So it's from the warfighting, you know, national security end to the humanitarian. So you mentioned like the Guard, the National Guard. The Guard Bureau is a partner in the development of this to ensure that we actually have then the capability to use that for our own disaster response, humanitarian assistance with the United States, as well as working with our coalition partners in whatever military or national security event that we might have take place.
So an incident like the Nepal earthquake is an interesting one, because in a lot of cases there, you're probably not just working with foreign militaries who are used to interoperating with the United States. You've got NGOs coming in who may have never experienced trying to interface with a DOD IT system before. So is part of the goal to make that something that's as plug and play as possible, where you're not handing them a mil-spec computer terminal, they can bring their own stuff?
Well, for the one, for example, I cited, that is, we don't give them anything. It is actually just a web address that they go to and can use it. And there are some NGOs that won't touch something if there is a Department of Defense
Absolutely.
But USAID and others will use these types of tools and other government agencies to be able to share information. And it is just literally, you can go to a website and you can go to, you know, a Wikipedia-type environment or a portal of something, you know, and just have a commentary chat. That's what this is in many cases for that type of environment. But then you have the other end of the spectrum to where it's actually secure information with your partner, where it's just, you know, things I want to share with you and only you because of the operational sensitivity. And so we have those capabilities as well today. But the intent is to get it to where it is more commercially based, using commercial standards for encryption to be able to exchange that information, to be able to have those secure conversations when necessary.
That's David Cotton, DOD's Deputy Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise. Back with more after a short break. We'll talk more about DOD's progress toward the joint information environment. This is On DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Returning to our conversation now about what's new with DoD's overarching IT modernization project, known as the Joint Information Environment. We have two guests with us this week from the DoD CIO's office, David Cotton, the Deputy CIO for Information Enterprise, and Danielle Metz, the JIE Project Director, talking about some of the tangible progress DoD is making after several years of planning and policy negotiations, including one of JIE's first concrete milestones, the implementation of JIE's security features through joint regional security stacks.
Let's pivot to JRSS, because I think that's one of the first big concrete deliverables that have been part of the overall JIE framework so far. And Danielle, you'll probably want to jump in here since you've got extensive experience with that. But brief, you got a little bit into this, Mr. Cotton, already. But to describe what JRSS is, the maturity of the overall effort so far, and really what it's intended to do. Danielle, you want to start us on that?
So when we say JRSS, it's more than just the security stacks. It includes the network modernization, which Mr. Cotton touched upon, is upgrading the optical core so that we have more bandwidth. It's also implementing the MPLS routers so that we can have more virtualization and more shared management. It's the stacks themselves that we're deploying on our unclassed and classified network. And it's also the cyber SA piece so that we are able, with the data that's being produced, the alerts and the logs that are being generated, blocks, et cetera, that the operators within, whether it be an enterprise operations center, the service network operations center, or even Joint Force Headquarters DoDIN, will be able to have access to the data to be able to run whatever analytics that they need to do to be able to respond, mitigate, defend the network, as well as do forensic analysis. So, to us, to DoD CIO, JRSS is the total package of the network, the security, and the cyber SA piece. And then for the JRSS itself, it's comprised of, it's an integrated system. So it has a lot of commercial off-the-shelf products, next-generation firewalls, the IDSs, IPSs, some routers, so that we can do some pretty cool things. It allows us to be able to have a standard platform, so that we're able to then virtualize pieces of that platform so that the individual services, the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, or combatant commander can be able to put their own security policy based on that specific mission set. So instead of having separate, individualized, physical security stacks, we're able to have that common platform and then be able to address mission-specific needs on that common platform.
And so in terms of overall status, first installation, I think, was Joint Base San Antonio, as was mentioned. Can you talk a bit about the capabilities that have been brought online there so far? And the second half of this question may be hard to answer in an obviously unclassified environment, but is there any way to characterize the capabilities that it's given you in terms of detecting, preventing attacks, malicious activity, compared to what the services had prior to JRSS?
Sure. So for JRSS, it originally started as a partnership with Army and DISA. And then so that was the end of the summer of 2013. And then over the course of 2014, that partnership expanded to include the Air Force and then working with the Navy and Marines to bring on their specific requirements so that we can truly get a joint DoD type venture. For JRSS, that is at Joint Base San Antonio, right now that's focused on the Army. And you had mentioned that, you know, each services start at a different baseline. Mm-hmm. So the Air Force, Navy, and Marines have done a lot of consolidation for their own intranet. The Army was a little further behind. So this is their first step to bringing onto the same playing field as the other services. So right now for Joint Base San Antonio, the Army was able to stand down their top-level architecture. That's what they call their TLAs. So their own individual firewalls and IDSs. And so now they're drawing services from the JRSS. And we're spiraling in new capabilities. So for right now, the Air Force has peered their regional gateway to the Joint Base San Antonio. And then once we add an additional capability, they'll be able to sunset that AFNET gateway, and we're moving forward that way. We also have, the JRSS has a joint management system is how we're able to remotely manage the JRSSs at the various locations. We also have the JRSS at Montgomery. It's the failover for Joint Base San Antonio, and we're moving towards implementing the one at OKC at Oklahoma City. And then we also have one in Wiesbaden that is going to be implemented as well. So there's a lot of activity, a lot of work in terms of just physically installing, then activating the stacks at the various locations. And then the real hard work is migrating the customers from their specific network infrastructure and security infrastructure onto the JRSS.
A bandwidth came up before. I mean, how important is that? Because it seems to me regionalizing these security functions really only works if you've got big enough data pipes to move all the all the data from point to point that used to be handled in very small service centric enclaves. How much of that MPLS and bigger fiber work has been done to date? Are you basically in a place where you can start to roll out these JRSS stacks across the country and really around the world?
Yeah, so DISA has the lead on doing the network modernization. That's within their core business. And so they're the ones that have been forward-leaning in terms of having the MPLS routers installed and implemented and activated prior to us bringing on the JRSS. And then for the bandwidth increase, we have the core backbone that has a pretty significant bandwidth, and then it's extending that out to the base post camp station so that they're able to draw from these types of services for what JRSS brings to the table.
We're on version 1.0 right now. I know 2.0 is when the Navy and Marine Corps comes on board. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so are we far enough down the road yet to talk about any lessons learned? I know there are some. Mr. Halverson said just yesterday at a conference that he feels pretty comfortable that you guys have got the hardware specs about right, the command and control is about right, but there's still some kinks to work out in software. I don't know if you can elaborate to any extent about what you're trying to figure out there.
The software is the JMS, which is the management system, which is to control the devices and components in the stacks that Danielle talked about. What Mr. Halverson was coming off, we just finished a trip of going out on the West Coast and spent some time on Silicon Valley. And there you're introduced to some interesting companies with some new ideas and technologies and capabilities. I actually was pleased to see that some of the venture capitalists introduced us to some companies and technologies that we already have relationships with that are actually building things for us today, such as in the mission partner environment and other things. And as Danielle will be quick to point out, too, in the devices we have in the stacks themselves, they are the next generation, which has the sensing capability that we require. And so I think where the boss is leaning towards is on that cyber analytics piece. He's extending his hand out to Silicon Valley saying, we actually need some help maybe on the data scientist realm. We're going to capture the data. We have some concepts of how to analyze that data. But if you've got some ideas to help us better analyze that data that we capture off of these stacks as they're deployed and operated to help us better understand what's taking place in the network beyond what we thought we're going to do, we're welcome and willing to have that partnership and have your support. So the basic foundation is there. I have no concerns there. I don't believe he does either. It was coming off that, you come up for that intellectual high when you're away from the building for a while, so you get engaged and exhilarated. You meet some neat and cool people, and it was a whirlwind trip and a lot of good information. So no doubt he wants us to capitalize on some of those relationships that we either reaffirmed or made anew.
During this whole JIE process, how much of that has gone on? I mean, I wonder what specific efforts you're making to bring, let's say, non-traditional defense companies into the fold and bring in those new cybersecurity ideas from industry. Is that writ large within JIE? Is that even an objective?
Absolutely. AFSEA has been hosting, several things. DISA has done some customer symposiums, reaching out to industry, specifically small business. I know that DISA does Industry Day, where they target small business. They talk about what we're doing or what DISA is doing with JIE, the different elements that make up JIE, and the opportunities for small business to be able to provide their intellectual capital and partner with DOD. So that is a key thing moving forward with just how DOD does business.
For example, on our cloud computing, we had a session at the Department of Commerce conference room, when was that?
April?
I forgot when the date was, sorry, but it was earlier this year. And there were probably 500 people in there from industry, and we had hundreds also that joined us via a kind of a web presentation. And there was to talk about the security requirements guide and how to have cloud access points to be able to take advantage of commercial cloud computing to the greatest extent possible. So there it was, you know, again, extending the handout to industry, help us, give us your ideas, please. What do you think is the best way to approach? You have experience in this area. Here is the draft guide. We posted that on the internet, had hundreds of comments come in on how we could change the policy, what a better approach to be. So there was a very collaborative approach, and we intend to do that regularly. In fact, next month in July, we'll have an industry day on mobility as well, partnering with a local association that'll help host that and actually engage with industry on what things might we take advantage in the world of mobility as we bring that more into the department. A good use case, for example, on mobility, we took tablet computers that we put on air crews instead of all those big briefcases of maps and charts and documents they have to take on board. Just by taking these tablets on to be able to have all their information on that, we're saving $1 million just in jet fuel alone, just by not having to drag that stuff around. So ideas like that can have, you know, second order effects, which then allow us to take that money to put together other operational needs that are need to be met in the budget.
Let me ask at least one more question on security and JRSS. Once you regionalize and consolidate something like that, what does that allow you to do with your existing cyber workforce in terms of reallocating the people you have into other positions? Are you able to utilize the folks you have more effectively? Because you're probably not going to grow the workforce by that much during this whole process, I assume.
Right. So I think getting back to one of your earlier questions about lessons learned for Joint Base San Antonio, we've been doing operational rehearsals. So from there, we recognize that the services are able to work very well within themselves on doing management operations of their network. The key with JRSS and the game changer is doing joint shared operations. And so therefore having techniques, tactics, and procedures in place where you're able to share information laterally across different operation centers as well as up through the chain. So that was a big lesson learned. I mean, we're always talking about it, but when it was put into action, that's when we realized, hey, we really do need to develop some procedures so that the operation centers can work together. And then to your point in terms of the more operational efficiencies and effectiveness that JRSS can bring to the table. Instead, right now in our current infrastructure, you have each individual service that have their own devices spread throughout their different networks that lay on top of another big network that has its own security devices. So you have all these different layers, a lot of unknowns, a lot of people managing and not being able to communicate with others. So there's not a holistic picture of what's going on. With JRSS, you're able to have, you know, these points of presence that are fixed, that you know exactly where they are. You have DISA that's able to be able to do the complete maintenance of these stacks from a certification accreditation. So all the patching and such like that, you have one entity that is responsible for that. So that's able to peel off those folks that are in the operation centers that do that currently within each of the services to be able to focus on the real hard-hitting things that are happening, the vulnerabilities, the attacks, the intrusions, the 0 days that we have. So instead of doing day-to-day maintenance, you can have them focus on the real things, protecting and defending the DoD network.
And then that whole environment then ties more neatly into the U.S. Cyber Command to provide that broader view across the enterprise for a command and control to give the commanders an operational assessment of the nature of their network and how it stands.
And I assume part of it, too, also allows you to automate a lot of the rudimentary tasks that at some point in the past had to be handled by a human being looking at a computer monitor.
That's correct. And so, and that's where, you know, the JMS comes in so that you're able to remotely manage from wherever your operations center is, and then to be able to gain access based on, you know, need to know and acceptance and such. Into that central repository to be able to do your analytics and to run the analytics that have been built for specific things.
Danielle Metz is the project director for the Joint Information Environment within the DoD CIO's office. She's one of our guests this week on this week's edition of On DoD, along with David Cotton, the deputy CIO for Information Enterprise. They'll both be back with us after another short break on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbin.
Thank you.
Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. On our show this week, we're getting an update on the Pentagon's joint information environment. Joining us for this are Danielle Metz, the JIE project director in the DoD CIO's office, and David Cotton, the deputy CIO for Information Enterprise. Just before the break, we were discussing the implementation of the first joint regional security stacks to come online. Those are the foundational security elements within JIE.
So as we said, JRSS, really the biggest, most concrete example so far of progress under JIE. What else would you point to either as accomplishments to date or things that are near term around the corner that are big rocks within JIE?
A lot of effort is being made right now on data center consolidation. The services are going through and identifying the data centers. In fact, to date, we have closed about 420 since we started that with under the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative, and we continue to make progress there. We're developing a more common baseline to actually called a rate card to be able to compare center to center to have the apples to apples comparison to help us better understand that, which will then fold right into our desire to take advantage of more commercial cloud computing. And as my boss has talked about, even look at maybe some non-traditional ways of providing those services, maybe a public-private partnership arrangement. But we have to check on some of the legalities and congressional type activities to see how we can do it, like I've done for military family housing, where you know we have a partnership there to do the same thing maybe in a data center environment to see how we can do that. We talked about the mission partner environment. The engineering team is working now with combatant commands to develop what that notional solution shall be for transition in this next 2016 to do that. So we're making some great progress there and great collaboration. We're also focused on how to better identify and present enterprise services. So to develop a more robust process, we have enterprise email today, which is used by part of the department. Not all agencies, but some agencies already had an enterprise solution in place that was more cost-effective for what they were doing, so that's why they still do that. But we're looking at how to develop that process of procedures to be able to identify, nominate, and then evaluate so we can make good, strong decisions in that realm.
And on email specifically, Mr. Halverson has indicated previously that he wants the next version of enterprise email to be an entirely commercial solution. Is that decision more or less made and set in stone now? Do we know where we're going with the next iteration of email, since, again, that is the first enterprise service?
So he has asked DISA to look at those options.
Still,
and he's also asking the military services to come in. In fact, on our trip last week, that was part of our conversation, is what are some of the candidate things we should consider. But it is commonly believed that we probably can get it at a more cost-effective and capable by doing it as a commercial solution, is why he brings it up that way, because that's what his experience is. He came from the Navy, where they have was NMCI and NGEN, and that became to be a very cost-effective approach. So it'll be an acquisition decision on how to proceed, but that's his desire to be able to explore that. They'll do the cost-benefit trade-offs and do a comparison return on investment to see what the final solution will be, but he is pushing us in that direction to ensure that we don't discount that from the beginning, because sometimes you're insular and you might tend to try to do something yourself when maybe you should partner with others.
Yeah. Bring us up to speed, if you can, on the stand-up of these enterprise operations centers that are coming around the world that are, I think, supposed to be these joint management, mm-hmm. Joint network management, enclaves is the right word, but joint management centers. I think UCOM was the first one, right?
And then the Pacific as well. So we have naturally those formed most easily there. And then U.S. Cyber Command is reviewing their whole doctrine and CONOPS of how they wish to approach. But there will be some in the CONUS as well, the continental United States, haven't nailed down the exact location. But today what is happening for our initial JRSS fielding, there's a DISA CONUS office, which actually is leading the migration of JRSS. And so they are providing that leadership at this point in time.
And Danielle mentioned the new Joint Force Headquarters, DODEN. How does that organization interact with the Enterprise Operations Centers? What are the roles and responsibilities? How do you delineate what each one of those does?
And that's part of what, between that Headquarters, DODEN, and Cyber Command, they're actually working on what their roles and responsibilities are as mm-hmm. that JFHQ DODEN stands up. Quite naturally, DODEN will have that first piece in there because you have the DoD Information Network, and so they will be the daddy rabbit for the command and control of that, the oversight of what takes place and how things shall be done and decisions that shall be made. And then there'll be the point of entry into US Cybercom for the other elements of cyber beyond the defense, but to understand what the foundational cyber environment is.
That's David Cotton, DOD's Deputy Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise. Also with us is Danielle Metz, the Joint Information Environment Project Director in the DOD CIO's office. They'll be back with us for just one more segment in just a few minutes as we wrap up our conversation on JIE. This is On DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED.
Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DOD. I'm Jared Serbu. Just a few minutes left this hour as we finish up our conversation on the Defense Department's Joint Information Environment. We're getting a progress report from Danielle Metz, the JIE Project Director, and David Cotton, the Deputy CIO for Information Enterprise.
Part of this whole JIE process, obviously, is getting everybody on the same page in terms of the same technical standards. And I've been noticing really a relative flood of security technical implementation guides from DISA surrounding JIE, everything from the joint regional security stacks to this overarching JIE description. I'm not able to see many of those things because you guys have put them behind PKI-enabled firewalls, so I don't know exactly what's in them. But can you give us a flavor of the standards that you're promulgating right now?
Well, in general terms, the standards would be those for which the security professionals believe the equipment needs to be configured to be in its best defendable position and still operable and usable, whether that be from a firewall or an appliance on the network, a server, a workstation, or a smartphone. So it's just the normal process we've always gone through. When I talked about the cloud earlier, we're actually using the FedRAMP process, which is more open for that, and said to be certified at certain levels of information, you have to be FedRAMP or FedRAMP Plus, as we call it, which is a little bit extra. We're working with the FedRAMP community to actually add those extra things to their next iteration, but it's to ensure that things are at the right security level to have the confidence that it protects the information that needs to be protected at the right level.
When you look at building a STIG or creating some other kind of technical standard that everyone's going to follow, how does the governance process for that work? I mean, how collaborative is it? How directed from the top is it by the JIE Executive Committee? You're one of the three members of that committee, I believe. Mm-hmm. How does that whole process work as we are telling all the military services and agencies to go down a single path?
Well, the XCOM does not, that you mentioned, does not oversee the STIGs. The mm-hmm. STIGs actually are a product of DISA. And DISA security professionals actually put that together and collaborate with a community that they have of experts that they acknowledge from other agencies in the government as well as other services to provide their input, their experiences, and their concern. And there's a process to review and vet that to ensure that it is meeting, again, the objectives.
And the STIGs are based on the cybersecurity reference architecture. So the JIE Technical Synchronization Office coordinates across the MILDEPs and the agencies and Cyber Command and NSA. So we have reps from all those organizations that contribute and collaborate on building out what that cybersecurity reference architecture is, for example. And then from that, the DISA folks that are responsible for building the STIGs are able to decompose that reference architecture to put into the security technical implementation guides. And as Mr. Cotton says, that's well vetted through the agency. So it's more of a collaborative process as opposed to thou shall do. Once it gets into the STIG, then it is a thou should do this.
Right. More broadly, what's the environment look like in terms of collaboration right now? Because IT within the department has historically been a very stovepiped, MILDEP by MILDEP thing. How are the military departments and services and agencies working together right now as you try to get everybody into a single enterprise environment?
I'm very surprised of how much collaboration there is. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I had 30 years of active duty or so, almost 30, and now I'm going into more of those years, is that it is the most collaboration that I've ever seen. The cooperation is unparalleled. I expected more folks to kind of entrench up in their position, but in the end, everyone understands that it's best to work together to be able to do things in the most efficient and effective manner because we have the same common basic needs. And therefore, when we do that, we can save resources that can be applied to other problems the nation or department has instead of maybe doing something multiple times. So It's unparalleled.
I wonder how sustainable that is, because there's nothing in law or statute that says you shall work together. How much of that is based on just a lucky alignment of the personalities that we have in key leadership positions right now? And to what extent do you think it's maybe a permanent shift in culture within the department?
I think it's a shift in culture, because some of the departments could have decided to do things in a different direction, did not, and chose to come together. And they're all in. They have made decisions and taken monies out of their budgets. And when a service does that, that is a public statement that they have changed the way they think. When they've changed their budgets and decided to go an approach, so for example, on JRSS, that is the case. We have right now the Air Force and the Army have changed the way they're going to behave and decided to collaborate together with DISA. The Navy and the Marines have said they'll do the same in the future date when their budget aligns. And so that's been projected out there. So I think those types of actions demonstrate that they have changed their way and that they will continue. And we'll put some policy in place as well. That's just prudent. We'll do that. And we have some things in place. We're very open, though, from the CIO, and actually put that in the hands of the military departments to do a business case analysis. And if they can prove a better way to do something, then we say, go forth and do that. And then we will then look at that and see how that maybe should change the way the larger department works when a military department or agency shows that they have a better approach to something as well.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Daniel Metz, Dave Cotton, thanks so much for spending some time with us and bringing us up to speed on JAE. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Cotton is DOD's Deputy Chief Information Officer for Information Enterprise, and Danielle Metz is the Joint Information Environment Project Director in the DOD CIO's office. Appreciate them giving us some time, both on the radio and on the web. They joined us for an online web chat to field questions from our listeners about the Joint Information Environment. If you weren't able to participate in that Q&A session, the whole thing is archived on our homepage, federalnewsradio.com. We will, of course, post the audio of the program you just heard at federalnewsradio.com/ondod, as always. Thanks for tuning in this week. Appreciate you listening. That's going to do it for our program this time around. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.